All righty, away we go. It is hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I saw yesterday that there was a report that Michigan State is interested in Urban Meyer, and my antenna went up right away, and I'm like, I don't know how much I'm buying it. We know that Urban Meyer has always been marred with controversy, and you look at Mel Tucker, and we saw the things that were allegedly going on with Mel Tucker at Michigan State. We all know that Urban Meyer can win football games. Everywhere he's gone outside of the NFL, he's won football games, and there's a difference in winning in college and winning in the NFL. And you saw him win at Utah. You saw him win at Florida, right, in the Swamp. And then we saw what he was able to do in Ohio State. I'm not saying that you can't hire Urban Meyer, and I'm sure Urban Meyer could still win a ton of games in the year of 2023. But with that being said, I do wonder how much of a long-term fit Urban Meyer is now in college football. And if I'm Urban Meyer, I would learn from what happened with the NFL, and I wonder if he could check his ego at the door, which he probably can't. But if I'm him, I would stay at the comfy, really enjoyable college job that you have now, which is breaking down games on Big Noon Kickoff each and every Saturday, compared to the stressful demands that coaching does require. And whenever there is a situation that starts to go awry with Urban Meyer, there ends up being a health issue with Coach Meyer. So if I'm him, I'm not running to the NFL. I mean, I'm not running to college again just because of what happened in the NFL. I'm saying I'm now up there in age. I have solidified myself as one of the greatest college coaches of all time. I won two national championships at Florida. I won a national championship at Ohio State. Sure, people are going to look at Urban Meyer a little bit differently because of the horrible job that he did in handling the Zach Smith situation and all the controversies that did follow him at Florida. But if I'm him, I'm good with what I did on the football field, and I would not jump into another college coaching job. Now, I don't know if he has that in him. You know, schools will always come calling, because we kind of do this in sports and we kind of do this in all jobs. We see what worked in the past, and even if it may not adapt to the times now of 2023, if you have a great resume, if you've been able to dominate at an elite level, even if you don't think you should hire that person, usually someone will come calling, because people get comfortable with things that worked in the past instead of trying to be innovative, instead of trying to be new, instead of trying to be young as well. So there will be schools that will come calling for Urban Meyer. I don't know how publicly that is going to play out, but what I will say is I didn't buy this Michigan State report yesterday that he was like in East Lansing and he's going to be interviewing for the job. And I checked in with a friend of mine who's done radio for a long time in Detroit in Stoney, and he was like kind of not Michael Stone. He wasn't buying the report as well. And then today Bruce Feldman comes out, and Bruce Feldman, I believe, still works for Fox. Or did work for Fox. Does he still work for Fox now, Stu? I think he does. I know he also works for The Athletic. And Bruce Feldman, who's a longtime college football insider, he says about the reports linking Urban Meyer to Michigan State, I just checked with him. There is zero truth to it with him being a candidate for it. He has no interest in that and is happy with what he's doing now at Fox Sports. So here's how I'll interpret that statement and that report by Bruce Feldman. Michigan State hasn't called him yet. Because it's easy for Urban Meyer to say, oh, I'm not interested in that job. I'm happy with what I'm doing right now at Fox Sports. Because if you say I'm interested in the job, and maybe Michigan State, for various reasons, aren't interested in Urban Meyer, it is a little bit humiliating, and it looks like Urban Meyer is begging for a job. And I think that perception does matter. So I just don't believe that Michigan State has kicked the tires yet on Urban Meyer. I don't know if they're ever going to kick the tires on Urban Meyer. But just because Bruce Feldman talks to Urban Meyer today and Urban Meyer says, yeah, I have no interest and I'm happy with what I'm doing now in with Fox Sports, if, let's just say, in 3 weeks, Michigan State calls him and says, hey, Urban, we want to bring you in here. We want you to be the next head football coach of our team at Michigan State, I have a tough time believing that Urban Meyer won't at least take the phone call, won't at least fly to East Lansing, and at least partake in the interview. Because even though Urban should be done with coaching, when people ask me the question, do you think we'll ever see Urban Meyer coach again? There's still a part of me that's screaming on the inside that goes, Zach, don't say he's done coaching. Zach, don't say that this is over. Because we know how college coaches are. We know how coaches are. And there's a lot of coaches that they retire or they get fired from someplace and they basically become zombies because they live, they eat, they sleep, and they breathe this crazy culture and they get addicted to coaching sports because of the thrill that they get. And I have a tough time saying that Urban Meyer is definitely done, even though it takes two to tango and you need a team that's going to be interested in him and he's also going to be interested. But I don't think it's going to take much to convince Urban Meyer to coach again, because down deep, knowing how passionate Urban Meyer is and knowing how just a competitive freak Urban Meyer is, what made him so great, it has to eat at him. It has to drive him crazy where it didn't work out in the NFL. And that's the last chapter of your illustrious coaching career, even though everyone should be good with it, right? You're Urban Meyer. We could separate college coaches from coaching the pros, right? No one looks at Nick Saban differently because it didn't work out for the 2 years that he was with the Miami Dolphins, because what he did before that at LSU and what he did in his best chapter after the Dolphins, being the head football coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. But when we look at things and we break things down as a normal human being, as a talk show host, as a fan, the way that we view things and the way that we think of things logically, we can't relate, we can't compare to the guys that were in the heat of the battle, to the guys that were on the sidelines coaching. And we see a lot of times coaches come back when you go, yeah, you probably shouldn't have done that. And for Urban Meyer, he shouldn't have ever gone to the NFL. But he got that itch. Shad Khan offered him a very nice contract. And you knew right away that it wasn't going to work, whether it was the strength and conditioning coach that he hired and all the controversies that followed him, the way that he treated people. And this is why, a big reason why a lot of college coaches don't translate into the pros is because it's my way or the highway. When you're a college coach, you are the king. You are the CEO. You run the university. You are the rah-rah guy. Whatever I say, that message is gospel, and everyone either has to listen or you'll get booted out of the university. When you go to the NFL, we're talking about grown men, that a lot of these grown men make more money than you, and they have families too. And that college style rarely translates into the NFL. And I also do wonder, like, we all know Urban Meyer could go anywhere in college and win games. But will it result into the level of him being an elite coach again because of the way that the sport has transformed, right? Players are now making money legally, and I have no problem with that. I always say college football, right? Everyone used to get a piece of the pie legally besides the actual athletes that we all watch. But now with the transfer portal, if you have one of those drill sergeant coaches where if you watch the Swamp King documentary and they're practicing in the middle of night, and if you're a great player, you're getting steak, and if you're not a good player, you're basically sitting at like the kids' table and hoping that they actually serve you a decent meal. If a college player walks in there now, he could get up and get on out very quickly and go somewhere and transfer free of charge because you get one free transfer. And I do wonder, where Urban Meyer go anywhere and go win 6-7 games. But Urban Meyer doesn't coach to just win 6-7 games. If you're talking about 9, 10, 11, and competing for national championships, I do wonder if Urban Meyer's style does now translate to the year of 2023 in college football. So Bruce Feldman denies this. Urban Meyer denies it about the interest for now of Michigan State and Urban Meyer. And Urban Meyer says he's not interested and he's happy at Fox. So with that being said, in the aftermath here of the Mel Tucker firing, who else could be some legit candidates in East Lansing? And I would call a guy that just joined us, in the last hour, Mark Stoops. I don't think Mark Stoops is leaving Kentucky. I don't think he's leaving Kentucky for Michigan State, because Kentucky has gone out of their way to assure Mark Stoops that what he's doing right now at Kentucky is important. And Mark Stoops last year felt comfortable enough where he could challenge John Calipari when John Calipari, who we all know Kentucky's a basketball school, just said that. And it caused this great overreaction. And Mark Stoops was annoyed to a point where Calipari had to publicly apologize. I don't think that was Calipari wanting to publicly apologize. I think he was forced by the school to publicly apologize. So I would try to go make a phone call to Mark Stoops. If you are Michigan State, I don't think Deion Sanders is leaving for Michigan State, but you got to call Coach Prime with the excitement that he brought to that program to try to get a seat at the table with Ohio State, with Michigan, and with Penn State in the Big Ten. That's also adding a plethora of schools from the West Coast as well. If you can't get Stoops, if you can't get Coach Prime, which I don't think either are going to Michigan State, Lance Leipold is someone that has to get a phone call. Lance Leipold, and Kansas has been a dumpster fire. He did a nice job with them last year, and he's doing a fine job, even though they did not show up in that second half against Texas. Lance Leipold is someone that is primed to get a bigger opportunity. I know Chris Klieman at Kansas State has said that he's not leaving Kansas State for Michigan State, but you got to place a phone call to him. You also got to place a phone call to the Washington coach in Kalen DeBoer. Now, if you can't get those big names, let's go through maybe a few names of guys that are either at smaller schools or are assistants. And when you look at the assistant route, you know, even though I just said that Ohio State wasn't a top five team, we know Ohio State has turned into wide receiver U. And Brian Hartline is young. He played in college. He played in the NFL. And he has just pumped out wide receiver after wide receiver at the Ohio State. It feels like it's inevitable that he is going to get a head coaching job. And we've seen a lot of younger coaches now hired in college football because they get NIL. They get the transfer portal. And they could easily relate to the players. Brian Hartline, like, Stu, let me just ask you this. Because I was amazed when I heard the answer. How old do you think Brian Hartline is?
Ooh, wow.
Just take a guess.
I would say 33.
Wow, okay. I thought you would guess a little bit. He's only 36 years old. Like, wow. We've talked about Brian Hartline for so many years here. Oh, he's going to get a job. He's going to get a job. He's going to get a job. If Brian Hartline gets a head coaching job, it's going to feel similarly to like when Marcus Freeman was hired, which is like a younger coach. I think Freeman's like 38, 39, something like that. But a guy that has been an assistant for a while, and you know he's ready for that opportunity. And yeah, Coach Freeman's got to make sure that you get 11 players on the field up against Ohio State. You had a crazy cathartic victory up against Duke last week. But you got to find a way to get the job done when you get the opportunity. And sometimes, like, you just hear someone's name so many years and you forget just how young they are. But Brian Hartline is someone that I think could be a really good coach and would be a good hire for Michigan State. I'll give you another one. This is another guy that we've heard his name thrown in for jobs for years. We thought he was going to get the Wisconsin job. Now he's on Brett Bielema's staff at Illinois, Jim Leonard. Like, Jim Leonard got his heart broken when Luke Fickell left Cincinnati to take the Wisconsin job. I think Jim Leonard would be a good hire for Michigan State. And then I'll give you three more, and we'll wrap up this conversation. Remember Charles Huff last year at Marshall and what he was able to do? Beat Notre Dame. That's a good, young, up-and-coming coach. Jonathan Smith, maybe he gets a little bit tired, and he goes, I have a really good football team. I have a really good situation at Oregon State. That's his school, too. But they don't have a home for the foreseeable future when you look at the moving landscape of college football with all the teams leaving the Pac-12. And then the final one, who I think his name will be hot, and it wouldn't surprise me if he winds back up at A&M, even though A&M may try to go for a bigger name if they get rid of Jimbo Fisher, but he was at A&M before taking the Duke job. That's Mike Elko. Mike Elko this year, and even going back to last year, we've seen him early on in his coaching career get noticed by a lot of people in his first head coaching job around the sport of college football. So I know I threw about like seven or eight names at you, but those are some names, and I don't think it's going to be Urban Meyer. I don't think Michigan State's going to call. I do believe that they call, Urban Meyer would listen, because it would not surprise me if he coaches again. But if it's not Urban Meyer, those are some names that I like for the Michigan State job. And if I was running the search, those are some names that I would target. All righty. Very busy hour number two of the program right here on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Omar Vizquel will join us to talk a little postseason baseball in about 20, 25 minutes from now. When we come on back, we'll update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We call that segment the News Brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, let's start off with the New Heights podcast. That's the podcast with Travis and Jason Kelsey, and they discuss the NFL's coverage of Taylor Swift at games.
I think it's fun when they show who all is at the game, but at the same time, I think
they're overdoing it.
They're overdoing it a little bit. For sure, especially my situation.
I just think the NFL is not used to celebrities coming to the games. Like, basketball has to figure it out. They show them once or twice, and then they get back to the game. NFL is like, oh, look at all these A-list celebrities in the game. Keep showing them, show them. Dude, listen, you show them once, let them know they're there. Maybe after a touchdown, you get a little clip, but you can't be overboard with it. Yeah. People are there to watch the game, right?
Yeah, they're not there to get thrown on TV.
Here's the issue the NFL has. I don't even want to say it's an issue, but they don't know how to handle not being the star. Like, the NFL is always king. No one ever finds a way to usurp the NFL. But when Taylor Swift now goes to an NFL game, it almost usurps the NFL, because Taylor Swift, and I can't believe I'm saying this as, like, the biggest NFL fan, Taylor Swift usurps the NFL. Just look at the social media followings. And look at all this craziness. And I know everyone's talking about all the other celebrities that she's with. No one cares if they're shown on camera. Everyone wants to see Taylor Swift right now. But it does become too much. And I really do believe that the NFL and these TV companies, too, that have all this money that they pay to get the NFL deals, they know that the NFL is always going to be this high, like the highest rated program that they have on their air throughout the years. Like, what is it? Every year comes out like 40 of the top 50 programs of the year. Or the highest rated programs of the year, NFL programs. But now you're getting new audience members, because there are Swifties like Stuart Kovacs, who would watch the games anyway, but let's just say Stu's girlfriend, who may or may not be a big NFL fan. Like, Stu, is your girlfriend a big NFL fan, or she just watches games because you like it?
She's gotten more into it, but it's still probably more watching because I'm watching. If I wasn't there, she wouldn't be watching, most likely.
But she is a Swiftie, correct?
Yes.
And she probably had interest in watching the game on Sunday night because she knew Taylor Swift was going to be at MetLife Stadium.
She was locked in pregame, during the game, all of it.
So there's so many more eyeballs to the set, and when you bring more eyeballs to the set, you got to kind of play the hits and cater to the audience. By the way, you want to know who's becoming insufferable? And it's a shame, too. Because he's one of the greatest basketball players of all time. But LeBron James tries to be best friends with everybody, and it drives me crazy. I've never heard like LeBron James say something critical about everybody, about anybody. And there's no way that you could live life that way. Now, you could say you like someone and you like everyone, but we know that's not the truth. Did you see, I can't find the tweet right now because he tweets so much, but did you see LeBron James on Twitter practically begging to get on this New Heights podcast? Like, LeBron, I know that you like the show with Travis and Jason Kelsey, but you don't need to be on every platform, and you could let those guys get some of the spotlight, and you don't need to jump on New Heights. I found the tweet, by the way. It's because he didn't put a dot in front of the at mention, so it goes right into his replies. Crazy New Heights, he tags. Crazy, I can't get an invite to join y'all. Fantastic show. Is it because you guys are truly the kings of Northeast Ohio and I claim to be? Be honest. Seriously, you guys are awesome. And he does awesome in all capital letters and a bunch of exclamation points. Now, Stu, I know that you are a big fan of the king in LeBron James, but you have to be like, all right, LeBron, settle down. You don't need to go on Travis and Jason Kelsey's podcast to try to throw yourself into this story.
Yeah, it's become insufferable at this point. I just kind of wanted to see him play basketball, hopefully 82 games or somewhere around there. Probably not 82, but, you know, as many games as he could play, and that's enough.
And the other bull crap is the other day. Oh, yeah, Anthony Davis is now the face of the Lakers. Come on, LeBron.
No shot.
We all know that you're the face of the Lakers. AD may be the most valuable player because you need him healthy to go win a championship, but he's not the face of the Lakers. Here is Von Miller on if he could play this weekend in London as you do have the Buffalo Bills going across the pond. This is via the Voncast.
If I was a betting man, I would say, yeah, you can expect to see Von Miller in London. This is my first time playing in London, and you know, who knows how many chances I get to play in London. So I want this to happen. I'm pushing for it to happen.
So Bills and Jaguars this weekend in London. I'm kind of surprised with how long Von Miller has been in the league that he hasn't played in London yet. But if he's saying that he's ready to go and he expects to play, sometimes organizations jump in and they go, all right, let's wait a week. Let's be careful here because of how important Von Miller is to that football team and he's brought in to win a championship. But it seems like you're getting the green light so far if Von Miller's that confident sharing it on the podcast or at least trying to put the pressure on the organization to allow him to play. Here is Aaron Rodgers on the always entertaining Pat McAfee show discussing his rehab for this Achilles injury he suffered.
You know, it's pretty obvious I'm well ahead of the normal protocols when it comes to rehab for this kind of thing. But that was always what my mindset was. And, you know, the type of surgery that that he'd been doing now for a little bit. And then, you know, whatever protocols were out there, just not adhering to those, being as smart as possible, not trying to stretch the Achilles, but stressing the Achilles in a way that allows me to start doing movement quicker and to speed up whatever timeline kind of has been the standard for this type of injury.
Do we have to really complicate this? Do you always have to be just conceited if you're Aaron Rodgers and as if you're the greatest thing and if you think really hard and if you try to defy all the odds, you'll find a way to get back onto the field as quick as possible? Aaron Rodgers isn't playing football this year for two reasons. Even if he's cleared, the Jets aren't going to be in the playoffs. He won't be able to be cleared at earliest until January. So stop with this nonsense. Yes, it's crazy how quickly he's walking around on the sidelines and all that stuff. But Aaron Rodgers using this like greater power of his intellectual thoughts that's going to quickly heal him and he's not going to listen and fall in line with a normal timeline. Like, give me a break. We're not going to see him back on the football field this year. Here is Dan Campbell at 97.1, the ticket in Detroit, on if they will play Jameson Williams this week.
Now it's just building trust, building a rapport with Goff, and get him some things that we feel like he can really sink his teeth into. We cannot overload him. Yes, we'd love to get him up this week, but we don't want to overload him either. That wouldn't be fair to him. And then let's just go.
Did he call his quarterback Goff there? Do we have that still one more time? Let's see if we could get that real quickly isolated.
Poor with golf.
Is that just because he's on a conference call and he's on? I've been on those chats before. The coach is always on a speakerphone. Or did you hear golf there?
I kind of heard golf. Like all the right. Sport golf.
Poor with golf.
That's a misspeak there.
It's close.
Yeah, I'm not going to crush him for it. So we'll see what happens with Jameson Williams. Andrew Berry of the Cleveland Browns, the general manager, on Deshaun Watson's shoulder. Remember, no Deshaun Watson last week, and you saw Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
Is there any concern that the shoulder injury will affect Deshaun's ability to pass going forward?
We don't view it as a long-term injury. Or, you know, I think Kevin mentioned earlier this week, there's nothing structural. You know, we are optimistic that, you know, it'll heal in the short term and he'll be ready to go.
Here's the good news for the Browns. They're on a bye week this week, and then they come out of that bye going up against the San Francisco 49ers. So that's not a good landing spot for Deshaun Watson to come back because of how great the defense is for the San Francisco 49ers. But when you're getting paid all that money and when they traded up all those picks to get you, I don't want to hear any excuses if you're going to be on the field. But I do believe that a lot of people were surprised, and I think even some of his teammates were surprised, that Deshaun Watson ended up missing that game against the Baltimore Ravens. So maybe this injury is worse than what we were led on to believe. Let's go to Derrick Rose, now with the Memphis Grizzlies, on his role with Ja Morant and trying to move his career back in the right direction.
I'm just told I'm not here to babysit you. I'm not here to follow you around. I'm not here to cheerlead. I'm here to push you and let him know when, in times, like whenever he's being reckless, to calm down.
So Ja Morant has been his own worst enemy. And bringing back in Derrick Rose makes sense because Derrick Rose has been around the league for a long time and has seen a lot of stuff. And he's now towards, what, the last two holes potentially of his career, if you wanted to use a golf analogy, and I'm not talking about the quarterback of the Detroit Lions like Dan Campbell was. But you look at Derrick Rose, if I was Ja Morant and I'm suspended for 25 games, I don't know how much accountability Ja Morant takes, and I don't know if he understands how stupid his actions were and how it could have been a whole lot worse for Ja Morant. And now you bring in someone like Derrick Rose, and even though you may have looked up to Derrick Rose, and I don't know what the relationship is, but you're cognizant of the type of player Derrick Rose was, a former MVP of this league. It's like, oh, here comes this guy in, and he's going to tell me how to do everything the right way. And even though that advice may be needed and important, there may be some resistance by Ja Morant. So I think this approach that Derrick Rose just took, where he's like, I'm not here to babysit you, I'm not here to show you everything is the right thing, because it kind of lets that wall down a little bit, and it may be easier for Derrick Rose to connect with Ja Morant. And finally, Phillies last year were 6-2 in the playoffs at Citizens Bank Ballpark. They are now 1-0 after taking care of the Marlins last night. We'll see if they can complete the wild card sweep tonight. But there was some interesting celebrations going on all throughout the game by the Fightins. And you saw Nick Castellanos, who's having a big redemption season in Philadelphia, flip off his own dugout. He explained why, NBC Sports Philadelphia.
You were on second base tonight. A lot of people around America thought you flipped the bird. But was it the ring finger?
Of course it was the ring finger, man. Why would I give the middle finger to my teammates? I love them.
I know. Well, I just wanted to clear it up for the internet. And the ring finger, you're looking for that ring?
That's why we're here, man, but October.
I don't know. I watched that video. Didn't you see the middle finger there, Stu?
I did. That's what I thought, at least.
So is that like TV chatter? I know John Clark from Philadelphia. Is that like cheesy TV where it's like, oh, let's get a ring finger quote in there? Maybe we just saw it late and it was going from the ring finger then to the middle finger? Is that what it was?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. I think he flipped off his dugout. And you know what the Phillies started to remind me of? Remember how the 2004 Red Sox called themselves like the idiots and they embraced that? You have a lot of like fun, wacky personalities on this Phillies team. And I say this as a Met fan. Like, this Phillies team is actually likable. When you look at guys like Nick Castellanos, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, the fact that he's even playing this year off the Tommy John and missed like no time pretty much. This is a likable team. And it drives me bonkers because all these teams that win World Series in the NL East, like when the Nationals won, they were a likable team. When the Braves won a few years ago, they were a likable team. And now this Phillies team is a likable team where they play in Philadelphia. The fans are crazy. We all know that they're great, passionate fans, and there's not a lot of great home field advantages anymore in sports, but home field advantage in Philadelphia really does reign supreme, and we're seeing it with the Phillies off to this 1-0 start, and they were 6-2 last year in the postseason. So I don't get, maybe it was the ring finger, like, oh, we're going for that ring. A little bit earlier to do that, if you ask me. But in the video that I saw, I'll take another look at it during the break, I thought I saw the middle finger. And I was like kind of loving that, saying, oh, 2004 Red Sox embracing the idiot's mantra. All righty, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll talk to a great baseball player, man, that should be in the Hall of Fame, but is not. We'll talk with that and also the MLB postseason with Omar Vizquel next. But first up, standing by with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, here is a man. Now, some people are saying this in the YouTube chat, by the way. They think Ack and I are wearing the same shirt because they're both wearing polos. They're totally two different kind of collared shirts today, but both somewhat blue.
Somewhat blue, but yours, they don't see the...
Don't see the fade?
Yes, they don't see the fade, but we're not even close in colors of
not
blue.
Not to be like Tara Banks on America's Next Top Model, because I'm the farthest thing from that, but I have like a fading blue.
But I like that people are taking note of what we're wearing.
Yeah, well, because when you were earlier trying to change the TV channel, they just saw the blue shirt walk right behind me, and they're like, who's that blue shirt? Why are we seeing two Gelbs in there? Because they thought it was like the same shirt as I. But
two Gelbs, they're giving me some size.
Yeah, right? We could form a basketball team. We just got to get two more players, then we'll have a good starting five or something like that.
Or I could stand on your shoulders and, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I do have, back from my fraternity days, I saw some photos that reemerged today where I was like picked up and they had like seven people were holding me doing a keg stand, and then one of my friends was on my shoulders too. So we could try that with the actor in the break. You want to do a keg stand?
You know, not really.
Oh, okay.
That's the neck surgery? No.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We want to make sure that the neck is okay.
Otherwise, if I was younger, yeah, why not? Sure.
We don't want you looking like Christopher Moltisanti with the neck brace.
Exactly.
Or Mike the Situation if we want a newer reference. Anyway, we'll get to Omar Vizquel next. Update time first. Here's the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. All righty, we'll talk a little postseason baseball right now with Omar Vizquel, who's kind enough to join us right now on the Zach Gelb Show, but where else? CBS Sports Radio. Omar, appreciate the time. Thanks for it. How are you?
Hi, Zach. How are you? How you doing? Yeah, we are coming into this celebration of baseball right now. This week has been a little drama for a lot of teams, and very exciting to be watching the games now on TV.
When you watch baseball now in 2023, I know it's a lot different. It feels like it's home run or strikeout. I know that they've tried to change the game with the pitch clock this year and also with bullpen limits and things like that. How do you kind of process baseball now in the year of 2023?
Well, it's a little different to what the baseball we used to see, you know, with the bunt and the steals and everything that went on in the old school baseball, should I call it. But it's very exciting. You know, you still see a lot of stars racing in the game. Not everybody can hit home runs. Not every team can survive hitting home runs. So obviously they has been adjusting their team to make runs, to manufacture runs, and everybody can do it in different ways. But there is no doubt that you cannot have a baseball team built in just home runs. You also need those guys that get on base. You need the steal. You need the fast guys. You need guys that know about the strike zone. And obviously, that make a huge difference when you get to the playoff.
I know you coached a little bit, but I'm surprised that you never became a manager. Is that something that you're still interested in, getting back into the coaching game?
Yeah, no doubt. I did manage in a little league. You know, after my coaching career with the Detroit Tigers for 4 years, I went to manage on the Chicago White Sox organization. I managed there for 2 years, single A and double A. And they were asking a lot of different things for us to do according to the cybermetrics and all that stuff that's going on right now. And we saw a little change in the game going back to those to the years that we played. But, you know, you have to evolve. I think every front office try different things to improve their baseball games, their players and everything. And, you know, we just have to go along with whatever is being teaching these days.
Yeah, and I feel like as Omar Vizquel is here with us, especially with the passion that you played with and the knowledge that you played with, it's now as if you were to become a big league manager, right? The front office executive walks up to you and go, here's the lineup for the day. This is what the computer basically told us. I'm not against analytics, but I don't think we should live and die with them, Omar.
Yeah, I mean, you have to learn how to get a balance from both sides. You know, it's hard to get a lineup every day and change guys around the lineup when you know that you have guys in the top of the lineup that are going to do the job, guys that are hot, that are swinging the bat hot in that moment. And then all of a sudden, you're going to tell him, hey, you're hitting six today because the numbers show that you cannot hit this guy. So, you know, there are different things that rub the different way with the players. That's what you have to be in constant communication with them, letting them know what is the situation, why are you doing the things that you're doing, so they don't get down on themselves and lose their focus.
I know you're probably tired of answering this question, but when it comes to the Hall of Fame, how have you kind of processed it the last few years? As I'm sure you're still hopeful to one day get in, but so far you haven't got that call yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to be in the process. You know, this is my sixth year now, and I'm glad that people still compare my numbers to Luis Aparicio, who is the only Venezuelan that is in the Hall of Fame, and then maybe Ozzie Smith, who is the shortstop that everybody followed, you know, when we were growing up. You know, I like the interaction of different reporters talking about why does he belong or why he doesn't belong and the comparisons that they come out. I'm still learning things nowadays that things that I did on the field, things that have to do with the evaluation and how they actually evaluate a player. So it's kind of interesting to see all those numbers throwing back at you. And, you know, it's kind of fun. But, yeah, I'm still on the ballot, and I'm glad that I still have the opportunity to be there someday.
When you hear that you have 11 gold gloves, that would suggest that you were a great elite player and that you should be in the Hall of Fame. Do you feel as if the voters just don't prioritize and care for a great defense?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, the gold glove is a very proud thing for any infielder. You talk to any infielder, they would like to get a gold glove in their cabinets or in their house. You know, the fact that I have 11 is amazing because the coaches and managers vote for gold glove, and they obviously recognize who are the guys that are the best on the field. And, you know, I felt pretty proud for that. I took proud on getting gold glove every year. And, you know, you play with guys against Jeters and Alex Rodriguez and Tejada and Garcia Parra and all these power hitters. And then, you know, on the fielding side, they recognize me as one of the best. So, you know, I felt pretty proud about those awards.
Do you ever sit back and go, man, if I just had 123 more hits, I'd be at 3,000. And then, you know, every writer with all these wacky standards would be like, oh, Omar Vizquel, he would definitely be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, when you look back and, you know, I took advantage of every opportunity they give me. You know, don't get me wrong. I play, you know, for 24 seasons. I was able to jump from one position to another at the end of my career. And, you know, I was a team player. I took pride of what I did on the field, keeping my body in shape, because it's not easy to just play that many years and be bouncing around, be like another coach for the younger generation of guys. And I think that's why you get that opportunity to play in different teams.
Omar Vizquel here with us. When you look back at some of your postseason memories, I remember the hit to extend the series up against the Yankees. Just what comes back to mind?
Excitement. You know, you have to give it all on the field. I know that in playoff and World Series, the numbers kind of get lost in there because people analyze one way or another what team is going to win. But it's just a matter of how strong you are mentally in those situations. I think the players that know how to handle the pressure and how to put away all the bad thoughts, negative thoughts, have an advantage. And, you know, that's what I love to see so much playoff games, because it doesn't matter what the people is saying out there. You have a responsibility and you have a level of tough mind that you can just go through. So, you know, the predictions are great, but I know there is a lot of things that get out of hands.
When you look at the AL and you talk about that experience and that mindset, I kind of feel, even though they're not the top seed, until someone takes out the Astros, just with how much experience they have, I kind of just expect them to be back in the World Series this year. How about yourself in the AL?
Yeah, me too. I feel the same way. You know, a team that experienced World Series already, they has been in that situation already. They have a little bit of edge and advantage over the other teams. They know how to handle things. And you can see how the last three games of the season, they needed to win in order for them to advance, and they did it. You know, how they do it, I don't know. But that experience will take you there. And I really believe that this team is going to be pretty tough at the end. And, you know, they're going to be hard to beat.
And in the NL, we know that it's World Series or bust for the Braves. The Braves have been the most dominant team in baseball. There's a lot of other good teams in the NL, like the Dodgers. We see the home field advantage that the Phillies have, what's going to go down between the Diamondbacks and the Brewers as well. But I wonder how the Braves respond to pressure. They got that World Series a few years ago, but now everyone's going after them, and it's going to be fascinating if they lose a game or two, how quickly they could bounce back.
Yeah, that's going to be the question for them. I think that they shouldn't lose any confidence at all, because they have, I think, the best team in baseball right now. They have it all. They have the pitching. They have the hitting. They have speed. They have just about everything. And just the fact that they have two MVP candidates that, you know, if one go down, the other one can come and supply the power or whatever they do. I think it's going to be a very hard team to beat. So for me, the World Series should be the Astros and the Atlanta Braves.
I know towards the end of his career, you were teammates in San Francisco with Barry Bonds. We were talking about your Hall of Fame status. It's a lot more complicated with Bonds. Personally, I think he should be in the Hall. He's one of the greatest baseball players I've ever seen. I know that you have all the steroid stuff and it's part of the conversation, but I don't ignore greatness. Where do you lie on Barry Bonds? Or do you think he should get the call to Cooperstown one day?
Well, all these guys that has been involved with steroids things, you know, they has been great players. You know, they obviously Roger Clemens and all the other people that are, you know, are not in the Hall of Fame. It's very sad to see because they represent baseball for a long time. And, you know, they make mistakes just like everybody else. And I think they realize it. But yeah, you see guys like Barry Bonds swinging the bat and all everything that followed Barry was greatness. How much he did for the game those days and, you know, the home run chase and all that stuff. I actually had the pleasure to be with him for 4 years. And yeah, no doubt that he has been, I think, the best player overall in the history of the game. You know, I didn't see all the other Roger Maris and all the other great ones. But I think taking a look at Barry Bonds playing every day, it gives you that feeling.
What are your thoughts when you see Ohtani play now? Because I've never, right, we hear about Babe Ruth obviously growing up, but I never saw him play. But to see what he's doing on the mound and also at the plate, I know he just had the injury, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, these type of players don't come out very often, once every 100 years. And we should be acknowledged a lot of things that this guy do, because not only he can throw the baseball and have some great numbers with the pitching, he can also go long ball. He can hit for average. He's a complete player in every aspect of the world. Great. So amazing to see a guy like this on the field.
Well, Omar, I got about 30 seconds here real quickly. I know you have a big passion for art now. Just tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I'm still hitting the art very hard. You know, I'm working on a baseball collection that is going to go up pretty soon. I'm trying to get the right people and the right places to go to. I'm thinking about Miami because of the Venezuelan people that follow the Miami Marlins, who congratulate them by the way, because being on the playoff is not easy, and they did it. And I think, you know, just it's going to be a little different thing. We're going to have some fun with that. Like I said, it's going to be focusing on baseballs and glove and bats and stuff like that. So take a look at my website. Take a look at the Instagram, because we're going to be posting a lot of things about this art show.
Well, we'll definitely do that. Omar Vizquel, good luck. Thanks so much. We appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, sir, for the opportunity.
You got Bye-bye. It. There he is, the great Omar Vizquel with us on CBS Sports Radio. Coming on back, talking a little Chicago Bears.